step behind the camera and welcome to the iPhotography Podcast.
Do you ever find it frustrating trying to capture pin-shot photos of your pets or even birds in your garden? If so, we have the course for you. iPhotography has an incredible wildlife photography course presented by renowned professional wildlife photographer Rachel Sinclair. This course covers everything, and I mean everything, from what kit to buy, how to edit your photos, how to even plan your own safari. Everything from bird to beast we have covered in this wonderful wildlife course. If you'd like to learn more, go to iphotography.com/podcast for your super cool listener discount.
So hello there. Thank you so much for coming along and listening or watching to the next episode of the iPhotography Podcast. This is Stephen here. Thank you very much for subscribing if you have done. And if this is otherwise the first time that you've listened to a show, you're in for a treat. I've brought along one of our fantastic iPhotography members, Steve Heffernan. Steve is a UK wildlife photographer, and he's been with iPhotography for maybe about a year or two, I think it is, possibly. We'll find out. But yeah, he's really kind of, risen up the rank kind of quite recently. His wildlife photography is something that's been very, very eye-catching. And I wanted to bring him on the show just to talk a little bit more about it, because I don't think he's necessarily been doing it for that long. Maybe he's not been a wildlife photographer for absolute yonks. By the way, I wanted to get the kind of the skinny on it and find out a little bit more about him, what he enjoys shooting, you know, what kind of issues he may kind of find necessarily when shooting wildlife photography, because I know it's a tricky area. But either way, I just really wanted to kind of celebrate what I think is a really, really strong and striking wildlife photographer. If you're listening to the show on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, wherever it may be, in the show notes, I'll make sure I put some links to Steve's social media or websites. If he's got one, we'll try and get that from him. And if you're watching this on YouTube, obviously we'll kind of put a few images into the video as well, so you can enjoy his amazing podcast. His amazing photography. Getting the two P's mixed up. Either way, I've got Steve waiting in the wings, so I'm going to bring him straight into the show and then we'll do our interview. So thank you very, very much for listening, and I hope you enjoy it. Let's get on with it. So welcome along, Steve. Thank you very, very much for coming along to the podcast. And I know, appreciate, you know, though I know quite a bit about your photography in terms of what I see in the iPhotography gallery, for those that are listening and watching on the show that may not be that familiar with your photography, I thought it'd be great to get a little bit of a backstory, really, kind of about you as to kind of what you do as a photographer, how you've kind of come to be. So have you got like a little bit of a bio that you can give our listeners?
Yeah. My first camera was probably in my early 20s, my first SLR film camera. And I really fancied myself as a photographer, but I don't feel like I ever mastered it. I used to buy all the magazines. I'd go do a few courses. I mean, they weren't online back then. But I don't think I ever really got off auto, but I just loved the medium. And I think at the time I used to be a printer. So I was always working with colours, I was always printing photographs. So maybe it was that link, I'm not sure.
Yeah. I've heard quite a few people have said that before, that it's almost like kind of photo envy they've got. They've seen all these like lovely images that they've worked through, whether they're in framing or printing, and that, yeah, it's kind of inspired them to go on.
Yeah, but I don't feel like I ever mastered it. And then I was always that person on the holiday, you know, was taking forever to take a picture when everyone else just wanted like a family snap. I'd be the one like trying to sort settings out and everyone getting fed up.
Does that still happen now, even when you go away now?
A little bit, but I'm a bit better now, a bit quicker. So, but yeah, I do like to go out on my own as well, so that makes it easier. But and then I think probably when my daughter was born, it maybe took a bit of a back seat. And then I think with the advent of mobile phones and the cameras improved on them, I just didn't pick a camera up again for I'm not sure how long, really, until about 4 or 5 years ago. I taught my daughter into doing she was doing a Duke of Edinburgh award.
Oh, yeah.
So I suggested doing photography as a skill. So I thought I could help her and it'd give me a chance to start again. Turns out my camera wasn't working, so I had to buy a brand new SLR. I don't know why I said not used it for so long, but it was just a memory card slot.
Yeah.
So I got an entry-level Canon and she did the course. And that's when I first probably picked it back up again. But then it's probably the beginning of lockdown. I took a few pictures because I had nothing else to do, posted them on a local Facebook group, and I was getting like a really positive response. And I think that's kind of helped motivate me to continue, giving me, because so much to photograph locally. And from that, I started the eye photography course, and it's just gone on from there, really. But so, I'd say this is the most consistent I've been the last 2 years of not putting a camera down. And I've noticed a huge improvement through that.
So it's been like a gradual thing really for you by the sounds of it. There's been a, I suppose, a stop start type of thing. And as you say, like, you know, if you've got other people getting into photography, has your daughter still kind of carried on with photography?
No, she hasn't. She's at university now. I mean, she talks about doing it. So, I mean, I unfortunately I traded my camera in, so she can't have it. I think she had her eye on it, but I traded it in. So she might go back. She sent me a few pictures on her phone, so I think she may be a little bit interested.
Well, yeah. That's good. Yeah, it's. I do find, or I hear certainly a lot of stories of it kind of being passed down the generations in a sense as well, that people kind of, you know, maybe like their grandparents have done it, or they saw their mum or their dad kind of, you know, used to be going out with the camera and they wanted to kind of, you know, be, you know, take the pictures when they were young, and it's just extrapolated into something bigger and bigger and snowballed over the years. But, you know, for what you do now, for what I've seen a lot, and the thing that kind of caught my eye so much about your photography is a lot of your images are now like wildlife, nature, landscapes, etc. Is there a particular reason as to why you're drawn to those areas? Is there something that, you know, have you always had an interest separately in kind of wildlife, or is it just, you know, it's been a really good medium for you as a photographer?
Yeah, I mean, I've always loved the outdoors, and actually my day job is as an outdoor instructor. So I teach climbing and kayaking and archery, forest school. So I'm just outside the whole time. Wow. Probably 80% of the time I'm outdoors, and it just feels like my natural environment.
Yeah.
So then to take a camera along with me is just like an extra bonus, really.
Oh, brilliant.
So also, I work in a primary school, so I take children out doing rock climbing, kayaking,
archery. So you know all really good locations to kind of get to, where we'll be busy and where we'll be quiet when you need to. You've got a lot of knowledge behind that, I guess.
Yeah. So, yeah, I'm just, when I'm outside, that's just where I feel sort of happiest, if you like. Oh, so I think it's just a natural progression to bring my camera with me. And
that's it.
I've always enjoyed sort of wildlife.
Yeah.
Never captured it on camera, really.
No. Well, as I say, it's one of the... I would say anyway, given that I'm not really a wildlife photographer, I think it's one of the genres that I would struggle with personally a lot. I think it's a very, very tricky medium. You require a lot of patience, I imagine. That's why I'm probably sure one thing we'll kind of go on to talking about, you know, a lot of persistency, but planning as well. So as you say, if you know some good locations to get to, places that you can maybe get to that the public can't necessarily, you know, that's always going to give you a slight advantage. But on the front of kind of camera talk, as we were just mentioning before, that you had an entry-level Canon DSLR a while ago. Is that what you still got? What are you shooting with now? What's your camera kit?
Well, I upgraded the lens first. I think it was my birthday last March when I was taking more wildlife pictures, and I was getting frustrated that how close I could get. I couldn't get that close.
Yeah.
So I was bought, I think it's 100 to 400 mil lens. So the camera I had was crop sensored. And then the start of this year, the end of last year, I was getting frustrated again with the bird. It's one of them things you kind of, my pictures were getting slightly better, but then I realised I was missing something, and I could only do so much with it. I know they say it's the photographer, but there is only so much you can do with some kit.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I did some research, and I ended up going mirrorless, and I went for the R6 in the end, the Canon R6.
Yeah.
I was really keen on the eye tracking, the autofocus eye tracking, I thought, because of the bird photography.
Yeah.
But obviously that, and I was thinking landscape as well, so that was full frame. So I was trying to find a camera I thought might be good for both.
Yeah.
But then I realised by buying that camera and going full frame, I'd lost that extra reach from the 100 to 400 mil.
Yeah.
You know how it goes, don't you?
It is unfortunate. I mean, you have got the benefit slightly, is that even though you're on, you were previously on a Canon, which would have been the EOS mount, and now it's gone up to the R mount. I think, am I right in saying, you may be able to still get a converter, basically an adapter, to go from the EOS to the R mount. So if you've got a lens that is effectively a lens suited for and made for a crop camera, if you then adapt it and put it onto your full frame, you'll still get get the advantage of the crop factor through the lens because it's designed for it. So you may be able to, with a bit more, you know, have to buy some more accessories, etc. The alternative is spending more money and buying an RF lens.
I didn't go that far, but I did upgrade the 100 to 400.
Yeah.
So 150 to 600.
Oh, wow.
So I traded the entry-level camera and the Tamron lens for this new sort of the Sigma 150 to 600.
Well, you've got the right type of kit, and I would fully agree for anybody that's listening, because I know everybody, a lot of people that listen, you know, are always looking out for little hints and tips, especially within wildlife photography, because it's so diverse that I think personally mirrorless is the way to go, because for what you've just said, that the tracking, that it's all built around speed, and certainly, you know, the benefits of having full frame for shooting landscapes as well is always very, very helpful to get that extra dynamic range. But especially when you're photographing, because you shoot a lot of birds, don't you, really? So you've always got that kind of, I'd say, pitfall of motion, and certainly having a camera that reacts pretty quickly is ideal. But have you found that's been an advantage? You know, have you noticed that your photography is improved because your kit has helped you?
I think so. I'm capturing moments now that I you know, as good as you might get, I don't think I was ever going to capture with my entry-level camera. I don't think it was down to ability. I think it was just the capability of the camera.
Yeah.
And I'm finding, even though I don't feel like I'm there yet, I'm definitely capturing more opportunities that I would have missed, like you say, with the motion, with the speed.
Yeah.
It's definitely helped with that. So obviously, as a photographer, I can still improve, but that's definitely given me a nudge the right way.
I think it helps with confidence as well. I've certainly noticed myself that when you, like we always say, you know, and you've rightly said, it's not about the camera, you know, that doesn't make the photograph, but certainly when you're able to kind of get past the hurdles that you are experiencing of, you know, of not being able to kind of capture the moment at the right time, it makes you feel a lot more confident when you do get those shots. You're thinking, well, actually, it's not necessarily maybe a problem with me as a photographer, though there is always things that we can learn. Sometimes the kit does, you know, cameras have limitations. Even, you know, buying the top end camera will have a limitation at some point in some situation, but certainly now, do you feel that you're a little bit more hopeful that you know, you're going to be kind of, you know, potentially getting good, stronger shots with the camera that you've got now?
Yeah, definitely. And I think because the camera is such an upgrade, I'm looking forward to, I think it's going to take me a few years to actually get to grips with the actual camera itself, which I'm quite excited. I enjoy learning. So now I've got this camera, it's probably better than me, but I'm looking forward to the challenge of mastering that camera.
Yeah.
So I still feel like a novice, but I have got more chance to capture shots I want.
Well, that's it. If anything, you've probably got a longer shelf life with this camera, that there's probably a lot more now as technology progresses that you can kind of catch up to and learn to. Whereas maybe with your entry level camera, you know, you hit the buffer of what it could do and, you know, what you could do with it kind of quite quickly. And then you need to kind of go up to the next stage. But it's all very, very, very good points, I must say, because when you come to photographing wildlife, as I'm sure you will talk about, and I'm sure you've experienced, there is tons of, I say, hazards and pitfalls, you know, that not necessarily is limited by the kit, but, you know, in the past couple of years, you know, whilst you've been photographing a lot of wildlife, have you noticed certain hazards that kind of come up, you know, that you could warn other budding wildlife photographers about, things that you've seen that reoccur over and over again and things that you've had to adapt to?
Yeah, I think you've got to get up, you've got to be willing to get up early. Definitely, that's a hazard.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't actually mind, but in the summer that gets harder and harder.
Oh yeah.
And obviously weather can play a big part, but what I was finding with a lot of my photography, a lot of it was because it was early in the morning, or it might have been in woodland, I was really struggling with light.
Yeah.
So I was getting really, really noisy pictures. Now the new camera is a lot much better with noise. And I learned from Rachel on the wildlife course that she run about not worrying too much about noise. It's about the shutter speeds and the aperture. The noise is not a lot you can do about, really, with fast moving animals. Yeah. So, I've learned that. So light has been a big hazard, I would say. The time of day you have to get up, the weather.
Yeah.
And understanding your subject. So because I am interested, I am trying to learn more about the birds that I want to photograph.
Yeah.
You can't rely. I mean, I've been lucky on a few occasions, but I think if you want the shot, like on my tip list is a kingfisher. And I've seen one lots of times and I'm learning more about its habits and where it might be nesting, but I've still not got that shot yet. But I'm quite enjoying that challenge.
That's an interesting thing, really, because that's, especially with wildlife, and I've spoke to quite a few other wildlife photographers previously on the course and on podcasts, and they've said previously, you know, it can be quite hard to obviously get those shots. It takes a bit of patience, as we said earlier, and a bit of persistence. And you know, sometimes you're going out, you're shooting 200, 300, 400 frames, even more, and you're not getting the shot that you want, and you're basically kind of coming home and going, oh, it was a washout that day. But what keeps you going as a photographer? What kind of gets you up the next day and say, well, no, actually, I'm going to try again, and I hopefully it'll work, you know, how, because it's probably quite easy for a lot of people to do it maybe a few times over, then just go, you know, it's not working, either my camera's rubbish or just me as a photographer's rubbish. But yeah, do you kind of have any motivational things that you do, or is it just a mindset that you kind of approach photography as?
I think obviously you go out to get a shot, but for me, it's just being outdoors. That the shot for me is a bonus. That I've gone out to get pictures, but if I've spent 2 hours, 3 hours out, and I've come back, I've not had a good picture. Mm. I've still had a good time. Certainly, I've appreciated this more over lockdown in terms of my mental health. Mm. That's where I'm at my happiest.
Yeah,
and the camera's just an extension of that for me. It's just I'm capturing them moments. So when I come back, if I do get a picture, it's, yeah, that's a fantastic morning, I got that shot of a deer. Yeah. If I don't come back, it's not so much of an issue for me. It's not the end goal, really.
Yeah. No, I know, that's a nice thing to hear.
It's being outside, that's the main thing.
That is your main
goal. The photographer's a bonus, yeah.
Yeah. So as you say, your passion for the outdoors, you know, is just there through and through, really. Mm-hmm. I mean, with your portfolio, I say I've been looking at some images, and we'll kind of put them up on screen for those that are watching the podcast on YouTube to have a look. There's kind of quite a variety, as you said. There's a little mixture of wild birds. Then I've also seen kind of some more like native birds, and then you've got like your bigger like deers, etc. But do you have a favorite animal that you like to kind of go out looking for? As you said, I know you've got the kingfishers on your bucket list, but is there one that you would happily photograph over and over again?
Yeah, I mean, I quite like photographing the deer, and I'm getting, I know kind of where to find them now, and I'd probably say 7 times out of 10 they might be around about. But my challenge now is to try and get closer to them.
Yeah.
So I'm taking them from quite a distance away, from the opposite side of the canal. But I'd love to be able to set up somewhere and really study them and get close to them and, you know, try and catch them really close up.
Yeah, like get really, really kind of tight in.
Yeah. So I think that'd be a challenge. So I drew up a list about a year back of certain birds that I wanted to try and get. The kingfish is still there. That's just winding me up, the kingfisher.
they are.
And you see so many pictures on Facebook, and I think they maybe just go into hides where they're guaranteed to see them. So maybe I need to do that.
Yeah,
rather than trying to track down a wild one.
But, in fairness, that's a lot of what we did with when recording the wildlife course for iPhotography. Mm-hmm. That we spent a bit of time, well, I didn't personally, but tutor Rachel went out, and she was spending a lot of time in bird hides, because she said it's just really a little hub, you know, for wildlife, as you said, because sometimes you can go out to your back garden and you may not see any birds for absolutely ages, but these hides, they're very much, you know, particular community that if people are looking after them correctly and maintaining them right, they've got a nice kind of community of birds that are always coming towards the bird feeders and the little ponds, etc. But yeah, if you can kind of get to like a local bird hide and just reserve a hut for yourself for half a day or something like that, fingers crossed, you know, they should be able to tell you what type of, you know, birds that they have in that area as well. And if they've got a kingfisher, then good luck with it, really. But I think if you're kind of putting yourself in the hot seat of the right place to be at the right time, you're probably going to have more success than not, really, as well. But is there any kind of other elusive animals that you would love to photograph, even not in the UK?
I'm not really thought so much about abroad, but I really want to get a picture of a fox. I've only managed one so far, and it was quite, like I say, it was back with my earlier camera. It was very early morning. It was very grainy, the picture that I got.
Yeah.
So, that in terms of a mammal, that's the one I want to get, like, locally.
Yeah, Yeah, definitely. Yeah. You will have to be up early or staying out late for that or other. But yeah. I imagine they'd be fantastic. Because you see a lot of people talking about how foxes are becoming more urbanized, and you know they're kind of coming into towns and cities, etc. But I still think to kind of capture them in the kind of native environment, you know, actually out in the countryside, etc., is absolutely beautiful. Because I've seen a lot of images. I think there has been a few BBC photography competitions recently, and that have been kind of popping up on the websites. And there's some absolutely incredible images of foxes. So yeah, I can see, as much as people kind of see them as pests in some place, photographically speaking, very, very pretty indeed. But good luck with that one, definitely. But one question I wanted to kind of come to before we started to wrap up, this is what we call our time travel question. We ask it pretty much nearly on every podcast interview that we do. But if you can kind of put yourself in the position of basically going back to when you kind of first picked up a camera, so to speak, with all the knowledge that you've got now, if you could kind of give your younger self a golden nugget of information about kind of photography, or maybe just how to make it more easier or something, you know, that would really help you out in the long run, what do you think you would say to your younger self?
I probably should have stuck with it more, made it my main hobby rather than having several hobbies. I should have really kind of, because I did enjoy it and I did want to get better, but I think other things just got in the way. I don't quite know what, but yeah, I wish I'd have stuck at it, because 30 years, I changed jobs actually about 18 years ago before I worked in the outdoors. I was working as a printer.
Yeah.
And when I was wondering now about what jobs to look at, to do, I actually considered photography, and that would have been about 18 years ago. So for a brief time when I wasn't sure which direction I wanted to go in, I actually looked into options and whether I could get into photography or not. As it happened, I ended up working with children and working in the outdoors, but it's come full circle because I'm doing both now.
Well, that's it now. You're enjoying it. And, you know, photography has no, you know, age guidelines or anything like that, that we have, especially, I see day to day that now we actually have a partnership with the Duke of Edinburgh Award. So we're seeing a lot of young people coming into our courses and programs and starting up. So they're beginning from the age of 14, 15, 16. And then we also go to the opposite end of the scale, and we see a lot of people who are retirees that are coming in to take courses, because now they've got the time, they've got maybe a little bit of money, so they're able to kind of get themselves the kit that they've wanted, but they've got the time, as I say, to actually then go out and enjoy themselves. Whereas that kind of middle period of life, kind of 20s to 50s, you know, you may have the money, etc., and the energy, but you don't have the actual time to do it, really. So the fact, are you finding kind of just taking days off, or do you take your camera to work with you and shoot?
I don't take it to work, but I do have Fridays off now. So that's a day when I'll dedicate quite a lot to photography. I've been going over to Martin Mears, the Wildfowl Centre,
on
Friday, because it's perfect for sort of practicing with birds, because you know you're going to see them.
Yeah.
So I'm using that as a, you know, somewhere to go and practice.
Oh, brilliant.
My daughter's gone to university now, so I've got a lot more time on my hands.
Yeah, so you don't have to do kind of all the dad jobs, etc.
Yeah, dad taxi.
Yeah. But so for anybody listening then, Steve, I know if they've been watching, they would have been able to kind of see some of the images that we've been, from your portfolio. But for those that have just been listening, do you have a website or any kind of social media accounts that people can kind of jump onto? Because I'll add them all to the show notes for anybody else that's listening or wanting to watch. But have you got like a website that they can go to, or an Instagram or something like that?
Yeah, I've got Facebook and Instagram, and they're both Steve Heff Photography. So they've both got the same title. So yeah, if you look up Steve Heff Photography, it should take you to a Facebook page where I put my pictures on in different albums. So I've got local pictures, I've got wildlife pictures. Ah. The wildlife one seems to be the one that's growing now.
Yes.
I need to get back to landscape a bit, but yeah, and then I have Instagram where I put a few pictures up as well.
Fantastic. Well, so for those that are listening, I will put all those links. I'll get them off Steve and I'll put them in the show notes. So if you want to kind of go and check out his photography, and I please kind of implore you to do so, because there's some absolutely beautiful wildlife photography and landscape photography in there. So for anybody that's looking for a bit of inspiration or wants to know a little bit more about Steve, then yeah, you can jump on there and have a look. But in the meantime, Steve, I just want to say thank you so much for coming on to the show. I appreciate a lot of people that come on and do these interviews with me. It can seem a little bit dull insulting and a little bit kind of scary, but it's really nice just to find out a little bit more about the person behind the camera and the person that makes those images. Because like you said, you know, it's the camera is just there as a tool, as a byproduct in effect, but it's that person that kind of makes those images. So it's nice to know a little bit more, and maybe we can catch up in another 6-12 months and we'll see how you progress potentially, if that's cool.
Yeah, no, that'd be great.
Excellent. Yeah. Lovely. Well, thank you so much anyway for joining us. It's been an absolute pleasure. And for those that have been listening or watching, thank you so much for kind of jumping onto the podcast and kind of keep listening and subscribing as you do, you wonderful people. And we will catch you in the next show. So thank you very, very much, Steve, in the meantime.
Thank you. It's been a pleasure.